cover the roads and.
More next.
Yeah.
The clock hasn't been reset.
We're working on it.
Okay.
Scarves are the fashion this morning. Are you ready, Carl?
Yes.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the December 11th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please read the roll, Carla?
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Nelson Mandela, who we memorialized this week, said, "To be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others." We honor his memory this week and his accomplishments, and we also remember tragedy and should remember those words about what freedom really means. It's not merely libertarianism, but a mixture of rights and responsibilities that we still struggle in this country to get right. And we remember especially the toll that gun violence takes on all of our communities this week. We remember particularly Cindy Yule and Steve Forsyth. Cindy was a Kaiser Permanente hospice nurse. Steve was a marketing director and a youth sports coach. They lost their lives 1 year ago today at Clackamas Town Center, and I'd like us to begin this morning's work with a moment of silence in their honor. Thank you very much. We're pleased to welcome some guests to our unusually chilly council chambers this morning. We're still recovering from a 2.5-day power outage for this building. And we want to welcome 25 senior-level Foreign Service nationals, people from a number of other countries hired to work at U.S. embassies around the world. They bring cultural understanding and competence to this important work of the relationship between the United States and the world. They're hosted by the World Affairs Council, and they're here on a State Department-sponsored professional development program to help them better understand U.S. foreign policy, American democracy, government, and culture. And their program will cover empowering and engaging women, girls, and youth, energy, sustainability, and climate change, entrepreneurship, local job creation, and the economy, and interfaith dialogue and Muslim outreach in the United States, all topics of which we're very interested, about which we're very interested in Portland, and where I hope you're able to learn at the community level a bit from what we're doing. So if that group would please stand, let's welcome them to Portland. Welcome. Stay warm, learn a lot, and teach us a few things. Thank you. Any other announcements or courtesies before we start this morning, Commissioner Fish?
Are we live, Carla? Because our monitors are not.
Yeah, we're working on the big screen. I think it's just our monitors having issues here.
I think they're busy. All right, let's begin with communications items, please. Number 1160.
Request of Stefan Karlick to address council regarding West Hayden Island.
Good morning, Mr. Karlick. Welcome.
Morning, Mayor Hales, members of council members. Thank you for your time. My name is Stefan Karlick. I am the Secretary of the Hayden Island Livability Project on the High Noon Board and the Hayden Island Manufactured Home Community HOA Board member. After thousands of man hours and paid expert opinions, the port has come up with a business plan. The port wants to build a deep water facility. And the result of that plan, now after thousands of these man hours, they've presented to you, number one, cost, not known. Number two, return on investment, not known. Product, not known. Lessee operator, not known. Cost to taxpayer, federal, state, and local, not known. Build it and they will come. They tried this in the 80s with the coal terminal and it didn't even start operation, cost of millions to taxpayers and private investors. What the port has failed to tell us is that Portland never was and never will be a deep water port in the eyes of the shipping companies. The Columbia River Channel is not deep enough to navigate. True deep water vessels recognized at 45 feet in 2009, and with the new Panamax ships coming into operation in 2015 and on, that depth requirement is 50 feet plus. And you also need to remember on that water depth, a ship in sea water floats a lot higher than a ship in fresh water, so you lose about a foot of that clearance. Just 6 months after the completion of dredging in the Columbia River to 43 feet and more in places, in 2010, restrictions were put in place because of heavy silt buildup. Just 3 months after they completed it, and some of those levels were at 40 and 41 feet, just 3 months after the completion. The Corps of Engineers and Pacific Northwest Waterways Association warned that constant dredging is needed to maintain the depth to 43 feet. On November 22, 2013, this is related to the mitigation, 140 international organizations called for ending of biodiversity offsetting plans due to them not working. This is the same mitigation the Port of Portland and others are offering in the way of replacing destroyed ecosystems and floodplains and putting them somewhere else. It does not work. Even with continuing dredging, some ships have to wait at a story for preferred conditions, increasing costs in manpower and fuel costs. The cost of Bar and River pilots is another concern that is making this too expensive for the port to operate.
Need you to wrap up, so
sure.
Finish your time.
And getting back to the mitigation, we have agencies spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year to protect floodplains and restoration, and we have others that are willing to destroy places like West Hayden Island.
Mr. Karlick, we're about to hear from Lucinda Karlick, who may be related to you.
But she is.
Before we hear from her, thank you for the package of materials. But in one sentence, could you tell us what your recommendation is to us as to how we address West Hayden Island going forward?
We would like to see it not built. We would like to see being kept as a natural wildlife preserve.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate both you being here and these materials. Thank
and my
you.
Wife apologizes. She's not here. She's sick.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. And we'll hear from her again, I hope.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So Lucinda's not here this morning, but so could you move on to 1162 then, please?
Request of Mark J. Hoff-Hines, Jr. to address council regarding homelessness.
Hey. Good morning, Mark.
Hey,
how are
guys.
You?
Hey, it's Mark J. Hoffines, Jr. with UCARE. Luckily, I actually didn't even realize that I was on council, but I ended up showing. Good thing. Well, as of today, the stats still stand. Zero outreach workers. Zero people off the street, off the front. You know, they actually are having to try to find their own places to keep warm. The devastating part is the elements are still getting to people, and the city has yet to do anything about it. We've had one incident for sure where a homeless person was hospitalized now and severely for frostbite due to the elements. We've had a death, as you guys know, due to homelessness and trying to evacuate them from the city. This is not the route we need to be taking. Portland is great with every resource except for housing. The interjection from streets to housing is a great idea, but we need something in between. The only thing Portland is missing is a halfway house style shelter. The only way to end homelessness which you never really fully will end homelessness because there are people who will choose to be out here. But at least you can give them the option to get off the streets. If you had a shelter, they could go, take care of the business, get off the streets, have a place to put their belongings, stay safe, and be better operated within society. This is the only thing I see Portland missing. If we can get this done, you guys would meet your 10-year plan to end homelessness. Because the opportunity would be afforded. The deaths would be less. And also, I wouldn't be happy to be here before you stating it. The sooner we get this done, the better. I hope that you guys will actually do something about this. We've already got these two records on for this year. With record lows of cold, frostbite is a norm. Death is going to be a norm. How many deaths do you want on your shoulders? I don't want any on mine. And I appreciate you guys for listening to me on this matter, and I hope I got to you guys.
Mark, you know that the city declared a severe weather emergency. I believe we're now in our fifth or sixth day. You also know that we've got lots of nonprofit partners reaching out to people in camps and on the street. I know that Mark Jolin from JOIN has been out almost till 2 in the morning every day, and we also have Commander Day provided for police officers, giving folks rides to shelter. So if you know of an instance where someone has not been able to get shelter during this period where we opened up our extra capacity, you'll let us know.
Yes.
Because we got an army out there making sure that on this cold weather people do have
a definitely
shelter bed.
And I'm willing to do that because I'm out there beating the streets with the people all the time. You know,
I think the police bureau has given about 30 or 40 rides to shelters in the last few days. So.
And I appreciate that. And thank you for the update. These are the things that needs to be transparent to the community.
Well, let's be very clear. Anyone can call 211 and find out where they can get a shelter bed during this severe weather. So thank you for putting a spotlight on it. But
the only issue with
emergency network that's now activated.
And that's a great. The only issue with that is the mentally ill.
No question.
Thank you.
And there were some, I think, 26 folks that the police bureau contacted who refused the ride to the shelter, and perhaps some of those folks, you know, were not in full capacity
of
their judgment because
most
you're right, they were in danger every night.
I've stayed at UGM since the cold blast.
Yeah.
So, and I appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Item 1163, request of Sarah Lyons to address council regarding sale of the Freeman Water Tower property.
Good morning. Welcome.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, my name is Sarah Lyons, and I'm here to urge you to rescind the sale of the Freeman Water Tank property in Multnomah Village. As you're now all well aware, the Water Bureau entered into a sales agreement last year with a private developer with next to no public notice and absolutely no effort to get the best price, terms, and conditions as directed by three of you in a 2010 ordinance. I could devote my 3 minutes to hashing out why I think you should rescind the sale based on the Water Bureau's mishandling of the transaction, but I think I will just leave that to our attorney. Instead, I'd like to explain three overarching and positive reasons why you should rescind the sale and keep Freeman in public ownership. First, and perhaps most importantly, Freeman is the final piece of property needed to create a wooded trail that would link Woods Park to Southwest Trail Number 7 leading to Multnomah Village. Recognizing the significance, the Ash Creek and Crestwood Neighborhood Associations and Friends of Woods Park joined the Multnomah Neighborhood Association in calling on the city to rescind the sale. The pedestrian connectivity and, of course, public safety benefits that would result for countless Portlanders cannot be overstated. Second, in a world of climate change and disappearing habitat, every single bit of nature counts. While the property is a mere three-fourths of an acre, it's home to countless trees, birds, deer, owls, even elk. I even brought photos of the elk. Many neighbors took pictures. Further, the property adjoins existing green space that Parks and Metro jointly purchased in 2000 as they recognize the high ecological value of this area. Third, livability. As Portlanders, we pride ourselves on our quality of life, our access to nature, our parks, our community gardens. That's why I chose to move here a year ago. But more and more, Portland is divesting itself of these public properties in favor of development, meaning their future public good will be lost forever. Before we know it, the loss of this property in Multnomah Village and other similar sites throughout Portland will add up to a city devoid of very elements that have made it such a great place to live. It's truly a death by a thousand cuts. As a new mom, that's not the city in which I want to see my daughter grow up in. And while I strongly support infill as a means to protect our rural lands, it must be done very thoughtfully. When it comes to selling our increasingly scarce public treasures, I believe this should be done only after significant public consideration and with overwhelming justification. I don't feel like either of these criteria were met in the case of Freeman. Whether you live in Multnomah Village, Eastmoreland, West Portland Park, Grant Park, Bridal Mile, or any other Portland neighborhood, it's easy to see the value of keeping this property in public hands. Its potential is astounding, and its value is immeasurable. Let today be the day that you take a stand against this threat to Portland's quality of life. There is still time for you to make Freeman the poster child for what is right about Portland, rather than just another casualty in our struggle to do the right thing. I encourage you to direct the city attorney to work for the residents of our neighborhoods and negotiate a way out of the sales agreement. Hundreds of Portlanders stand ready to assist with getting Freeman added to our city parklands and implementing a vision for the property that ensures maximum benefit for all city residents. Thank you for your consideration.
Can I just follow up on your very, very thoughtful testimony? As you know, as the new water commissioner, I've inherited a contract for the sale, and I appreciate what you just said for this site. Do you have a local organization in Multnomah, in the Multnomah Village area, that's prepared, if this thing was back on the market, to acquire this property? Because the Water Bureau that I represent can't maintain natural areas. That's not our core missions. It's a surplus property as declared by the council. So do you know of someone who's willing to come in and purchase this to maintain it in its current state?
I think a lot of people, civilians, would like the option to. I don't, no one's out, come out and said to me, I will buy it, but I don't think that that option's ever been given to them, and I'd like them to speak for themselves whether they would be.
I just want to make it clear on the record that since I've been tasked with looking into options on behalf of the council, and I inherited a binding contract that, as you know, I had nothing to do with. If there is an interest locally in acquiring this site at fair market, mm-hmm. and I've also heard that you've claimed that the price that we've offered it to the developer was not fair market, I'd like to know what that fair market is, because we have to ask the community to pay for the fair market. But if you have someone who's willing to step up and acquire it,
okay,
because the Portland Water Bureau has been sued for doing things like this, maintaining assets that are not part of its core mission, I would be very receptive to that. And if you have, even if you sent me an email with the name of a group that you think might be willing to buy it, that would be helpful in the process we're going through looking at options.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And 1164, please.
Request of Joe Williams to address council regarding the USO returning to Oregon after 40 years.
Good morning, Colonel Williams.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Commissioners, I'm glad to be here this morning to tell you how I'm leading the effort to bring the USO back to Oregon after a 40-year absence. Same thing you heard on Veterans Day when the Hollywood District honored the USO to be the Grand Marshal for this year's Veterans Day celebration and parade in the Hollywood District. They did a fantastic job with that. I'm not sure if your machines are working.
Yes, they are now.
We've got this second slide. It's kind of a build slide, so I'll build it out. I don't know if you can see the photo rendering. We've most of our support so far has been in-kind donations, architect, engineering support, interior design team. Interior design team developed this rendering. They're out of Merrillhurst University, so one of the instructors and three students. Hmm. This is their internship in order to complete the program at Merrillhurst. Hmm. The USO Center will be located on the mezzanine level prior to going through security. So it's up near the PDX Conference Center. It's approximately 650 square feet, currently being used as a storage room, and we will convert it. Construction takes about 45 to 50 days to convert it over to a USO Airport Center. Typical of a USO Airport Center, and your son, who's a Army veteran, HUA, that's kind of the Army term for his service, can tell you about the USO, and I'm sure he spent some time in various USOs, has things such as TVs, snacks, soft drinks, coffee, other refreshments, laptops with Wi-Fi access. Sharp Microelectronics, our friends across the river in Camas, are donating all of the flat screens, all of the computers, all of the electronics, about $10,000 worth of equipment. And the best part of what they're doing for us is they're going to come and install and make sure everything works. Because I don't know about you, Mayor, but for me, it's a good thing I've got a teenager and one that's in college, or I'd have big trouble at home on making all my electronic items work. We will have volunteers, an army of gratitude. We currently have over 250 people that have contacted me wanting to volunteer at this USO. Probably an Xbox entertainment system and then a list of vendors and the restaurants that offer military discounts at the airport. So subject to that, our timeline is should have the lease signed shortly. The USO Northwest Board of Directors is meeting tomorrow to approve the final business plan, authorize the executive director to sign the lease, and then we'll move forward. We've been working with Fred Dice out of Building Services, been a delightful gentleman to work with and has been very, very helpful to us. Great. So subject to any questions?
Just appreciate what you're doing. It's a big volunteer effort that you've herded together to a good cause, so thank you.
Get to be my age, need an encore project in life, and this is mine.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Appreciate what you're doing. Yeah.
Got you a calendar, I think you just
Yes, we got it. Yes. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, let's move to the consent calendar. I've had a couple of requests to pull items. One was 1167. Another was 1169, and the third was 1172. Any other consent calendar items that someone wants to pull? If not, then let's vote on the balance of the consent calendar.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. All right, time certain, 9:30, item 1165.
Adopt Portland Bureau of Emergency Management Strategic Plan 2014-2016.
Commissioner Novick.
So, colleagues, as you no doubt suspect, Carmen hasn't slept much in the past 3 days. I'm sure that she will perform sparklingly in spite of that, but just wanted to note that for the record. I did ask Carmen last night, based on the events of the past couple of days, would you change your strategic plan? And she said, no, not at all. But she certainly has some things to say about lessons learned or perhaps concerns reinforced in the past couple of days. So after her initial presentation, I'm sure she'll be happy to expound on those. Two other things I wanted to note. One is that I think that we have somewhere around 53 work items identified in the strategic plan. There's 10 of them that are in bold, and those are sort of our highest priority items, and they're sprinkled through the document. When you see bold, know that's the priority. Another thing I wanted to note is that this is PBEM's strategic plan, but there are instances where there's other public or private entities inside and outside the city which PBEM will be working with on important issue items. For example, trying to figure out what to do about our unreinforced masonry buildings. One of PBEM's priorities is to work with BDS and figuring out a solution. Another of PBEM's priorities is to work with the energy industry to address the threat to our energy infrastructure, which is housed in a rather dangerous place. There are other projects the city needs to undertake in order to improve our preparedness where the problem is clear and the relevant entity has identified a plan of action, and they're not in their strategic plan because there's not really much for PBEM to add. For example, the Water Bureau is aware that the entire west side might lose water unless steps are taken, and the Water Bureau has the Willamette River Crossing Plan. That's not something we really have much to add to, so that's not in our strategic plan. So the strategic plan includes work items where we're working with other people and I have something to add, but it does include items where other people have stuff to do and they need to just go and do it. So with that, I'll turn it over to Carmen.
Thank you, Commissioner, Mayor. Carmen Merlo, the Director of the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. I'm really honored to have with me Joe Rizzi. He is the Director of the Multnomah County Office of Emergency Management. Out of my leadership team here as well, David Blitzer, my Operations Manager, and John Apapafemi, my Planning and Preparedness Manager. I'm going to give you a very high-level overview of our strategic plan and certainly available to answer any questions afterwards. I don't know if you can... Is it on there? Okay, great. All right, first to start with, I want to talk a little bit about how we came to inform our strategic plan. We did quite a bit to get feedback. We had an all-day planning work session with staff, certainly the Portland plan, after-action reports and improvement plans from previous emergency incidents as well as real-world events, including events of the past couple of days, state and federal requirements, input from our regional partners as well as community stakeholders, EMAP, which is the Emergency Management Accreditation Program standards, and finally, of course, input from not just our commissioner in charge, but our Emergency Management Steering Committee and Disaster Policy Council. PBAM provides the leadership to coordinate the city's mitigation, preparedness, response, and recovery efforts, but we can't do this alone. And so I hope one of the themes that you'll see throughout the strategic plan is us trying to leverage the sphere of influence of our key partners to inspire a culture of preparedness. Vision is a resilient Portland. Most people define resilience as just the ability to bounce back. We think of it a little bit more than that. In most cases, we don't want things to go back to where they were, so going back is not really an option. We want to use the opportunity to thrive, even grow from the disruption. So how does a city thrive after a disaster? Well, several ways. You want to use the opportunity to design and construct better buildings, not build in hazard-prone areas, harden critical infrastructure, and, of course, increase community preparedness. Resilience is influenced by quite a few factors. None of these alone can achieve resilience, but all of them together will better ensure a resilient city. The events of the last couple of days, business and government continuity of operations, and I'm certainly happy to answer any questions you may have after the presentation. In thinking about how we focus our efforts, we took a look at some national and local trends in emergency management, starting with aging critical infrastructure and lifeline vulnerabilities. I think it's no surprise that many of our assets are either reaching or have already come to their useful end of life, and much of it was built prior to an understanding of our seismic risk here in the Pacific Northwest. The power outage we had the last couple of days certainly underscores the reliance we have on some major lifelines, including electricity. We rely on electricity to power computers and pump our fuel. So for Portland to recover quickly, we'll need to work very closely with our private sector partners who own much of the critical infrastructure in the city. From sustainability to resilience, Portland, of course, as you know, has a national reputation for being a leader in sustainability. But the term sustainability is often really limited to us having a minimal impact on the environment. I think a more thoughtful approach would be to adopt a framework of resilience, which talks about the environment having a minimal impact on the people. And so where we talk about, for example, LEED buildings, in addition to taking into account the energy efficiency, the waste reduction of the buildings, why aren't we also talking about the building performance and, in particular, seismic performance of the buildings? There's a growing movement you may have seen about adoption of this micro-unit framework, and you see examples of it everywhere, micro-businesses, micro-financing, micro-apartments. And we thought, why not adopt a very similar model to preparedness? So rather than use arbitrary neighborhood or census boundaries, we wanted to identify very specific micro-communities and use the opportunity to strengthen social networks and increase community and neighborhood cohesion. We know disasters have a significant impact on business continuity and economic growth. If we want to attract business and skilled employees, we need to demonstrate that the city has made similar investments in our own infrastructure so that we can maintain economic activity. And investing in disaster resilience also creates job opportunities in various sectors, everything from engineers and laborers to modernize our critical infrastructure, as well as building professionals. And lastly, the role of social media during emergencies. It's probably no surprise that social media has really transformed the way that we both communicate and get emergency information to the public. Information moves really rapidly. Things are constantly fluid, and so it's up to us to keep pace with the information. One of the focus of our strategic plan has been the pursuit of what's called EMAP. That's the Emergency Management Accreditation Program. Communities achieving EMAP accreditation are among the most prepared to handle any emergency. Around the country, very few states and even fewer cities have achieved this accreditation, and none presently in Oregon. And so one of our focus areas is to achieve EMAP accreditation by the end of December 2016, and we've developed a path that will get us there with five goals in mind. So I'm not going to go through each one of these, but I've just listed them out there for you. And I'm going to turn it over to Joe Rizzi to say just a few words about our strategic plan and city-county collaboration.
So first, did you want to go to questions first, or would you like me to?
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
Go ahead. I think the panel should go ahead and speak, Steve, yeah. That's fine. And then we'll spend some time. Thank you.
So good morning, Mayor Hales and Board of Commissioners. My name is Joe Rizzi. I'm the director for the Office of Emergency Management for Multnomah County. I just want to give my support to their strategic planning for the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. Over the past 11 months, we've worked really closely with emergency management from Portland and Multnomah County. Multnomah County has been building a team over the past 11 months and kind of restructuring emergency management. And we've collaborated on a lot of different projects, things like mass care and sheltering, where we had over 150 people there from the community, and Portland being one of those helping support that project. We really enjoy having the leadership from Carmen Merlot and David Blitzer, as well as our team. And my team is integrating with them and working closely on projects, not only for planning, but also community outreach. And getting out into the communities of some of our most vulnerable populations, so some of the low-income populations and culturally specific populations that have the largest impacts during a disaster. So that's really our focus, and their strategic plan is really working with us to move forward and work as a team. One of the crucial things for us is that ongoing support and partnership. It allows us to help prepare for, respond to, recover from, mitigate against disasters, both natural or man-made. Without that support to their bureau, it makes it very difficult for Multnomah County to be able to help its citizens and its community in general. A few of the other projects that we work together on is things like debris management. Debris management is going to be a large issue if we have a Cascadia event, a large earthquake, or even a large windstorm or ice storm that caused a lot of woody debris. Other things are things like alerts and warnings, so being able to alert our public of issues that are happening. You guys used the alerts and warnings over the past few days just to alert your own employees, allowing them to know whether they can report to work or not, as well as issues around public health, whether it's a boil water notice, whatever that might be. So in conclusion, I just want to give one recommendation and just say I urge you to support emergency management and their strategic plan to help keep our community safe and resilient into the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
We don't have anything prepared.
You're here to back up or in case
we get some
Carmen
questions.
Carmen doesn't face plant from sleep deprivation.
I'm pretty tired.
Questions, points to raise with this group. Yes, Commissioner Fisher.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Carmen. And thanks for your splendid work over the last few days. Are we going to have a chance this morning, separate and apart from this presentation, just to get some of your thoughts on what worked and didn't work over the last 3 days?
I'd be happy to share a couple of things now, and I'm sure there'll be other things as well. I am planning to convene a debrief so that we'll bring
all
the...
You can do a more comprehensive debrief?
Yeah, absolutely.
So a few things to the the presentation this morning. The first is, in going through your strategy and the action items, I see that Commissioner Novick said some are highlighted in bold. Those are the high priority ones. But I notice that a number of our bureaus are woven through this. Is it your intention to schedule meetings with individual commissioners and their directors to do the follow-up on the action items?
Absolutely.
I would personally like to be involved in that just so I can hear your pitch to my bureau directors and make sure we're all coordinated.
Understood.
So I would welcome that. Carmen, one of the items that's not highlighted is 1.8. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a priority, but it's this is the one that talks about a recovery plan for our subsidized housing. Mm-hmm. Since you have made equity a big cornerstone of this, it strikes me that this is still an area of big opportunity because of the vulnerable populations that we house directly or indirectly, and we're talking about thousands and thousands of people. So do you have any thoughts as to how we could create some baseline standards for all of our partners from local housing authorities, nonprofit partners, and anything that we subsidize so that, you know, you're satisfied that there's a consistent standard of emergency preparedness in housing?
Well, certainly, I think as a starting point, we want to make sure that the housing currently available is retrofitted, is seismically sound. We want to make sure that we're not putting people in dangerous situations. But, Commissioner, honestly, I have not really had that opportunity to meet with Director Manning and really have more of a conversation about that. I believe that item isn't on the agenda for a little bit longer, and so we're working towards this next coming year, but certainly we'll work to meet with Tracy Manning to get a more developed plan together.
I was present when you gave a briefing to the operator, Bud Clark Commons, and you talked about, in that one situation, getting the three partners on the same page,
yeah,
making sure minimum standards. And I just want to put down a note of urgency around this, and it's something that, because the city funds directly or indirectly a lot of these types of developments, it could be something where some basic standards are embedded into the contract with the city, where they have to at least produce an emergency plan, has to be
exactly. We did muster. Talk about each of them having a COOP plan in place. Obviously, so those I believe are already in motion.
Okay, very good. I would like some follow up on that if I
absolutely
could, just as and see if we can be helpful. The other thing I just wanted to mention was, when we lost power, my understanding is, while we knocked out two buildings, we still got a, because of a generator, we were able to run
data
the call center in the Portland building?
No, we did not.
No, that was down.
The only thing the main thing was the data center on the third floor. The call center was not working.
Excuse me, the data center.
Right.
Now, for example, in the Water Bureau, there was an emergency number people could call if they had a frozen pipe or a problem that did get through. And then the Water Bureau ran extra crews in mm-hmm. the evening to deal with that. In our emergency centers where we have the computer technology, we have backup generators.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a redundancy in case we lose power in those secure locations. One of the things that I hope we can debrief out of the last few days is whether you recommend we have some enhanced backup generators for certain of
right.
our functions. And what the cost would be of that, because that seems to me a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I have a list of five things here, and certainly an assessment of all of our facilities and their generator capacities is on the top of the list, in addition to a fueling contract to top off each of the fuel tanks for those generators. Those are the two of the top five things that I would make a recommendation
Mayor,
about.
May I use this forum just to brag on one group of city employees who,
sure.
who worked hard over the and they worked very closely with Carmen, but we had a lot of pipes that failed, a lot of frozen pipes, both residential and commercial. We had extra crews working in the evenings at the Water Bureau. And this is something people, you know, it's not sexy work. It doesn't get a lot of attention. But, for example, last night at 8:30, I got a text at home saying that the water had been shut off at the Nines Hotel, which was, I think, close to occupancy, which meant showers, bathrooms, and also emergency services all impaired. Director Schaff got on the phone immediately with the general manager and their engineer. Within 5 minutes, a crew arrived with our senior engineer from the Bureau. Ty Kovach came from his home and arrived. At 9:30, I got an email from the general manager saying that within 1 hour they had identified the problem, fixed it, and the water was turned back on for all the folks who were at the nines. And I'm not just singling out the Water Bureau. I'm sure there's dozens and dozens of stories like that of people performing at a high level during this emergency. And I just want to acknowledge the unsung heroes, the people mm-hmm. that are out, you know, addressing homelessness, the Water Bureau people, emergency management, your team that was, and as your commissioner in charge noted, you haven't slept in a few days. All the people that used to, that kept the city functioning during a crisis. And I just want to thank everyone who went above and beyond for the benefit of the people we serve.
Thanks, here. Commissioner. If I could just give a quick compliment to OMF facilities. They were extraordinary, and Bob Keita and his team were really outstanding. So I'm very grateful to the work that they did.
Yeah. If I can mention one thing about the housing that you spoke of, it's always a concern for us, our citizens that are during earthquakes and what might happen. The project I stated earlier, the Mass Care and Sheltering project, Mass Care and Sheltering really falls under kind of a county responsibility, but we partner with our cities to make sure that we can do that after a disaster. Unfortunately, the earthquake standards that are currently in Oregon statute are not for occupancy after an earthquake. They're only for life safety. So after an earthquake, the standards, even they're built to earthquake standards, is really so people can get out of the home in a safe manner. It's not built to a standard where they can go reoccupy that home. So even if you, I think it's admirable and you want to make sure that you at least meet that minimum standard, and you can look at as a city as other things that you might be able to do to say, how do we then take it up a notch? But we're hoping that the Mass Care and Sheltering Plan, although it's a two-year process, we'll also address interim housing, and that's housing after the first 30 days, and then long-term housing, which would be after, it could be 30 days or ongoing. Long-term housing can be after 60 days on to years. When you saw Katrina, we still have some interim housing or long-term housing that's there. So we're really happy to be working with the Port of Portland, with the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. I have not slept much the past 3 days as well. And we've coordinated a lot over the past 3 days, and it's been really helpful for us to have our organizations, both Multnomah County and Portland, in total alignment. So when we were having conference calls and meetings, so were you, and then me and Carmen would debrief afterwards, and it would be able to allow us to give you guys kind of what was happening with the state court systems, with the Portland building, with the DA's office that's housed in this building. So I just want to thank you and make a quick comment.
And I appreciate your comment about vulnerable populations, because one of the things that I think we all share, both jurisdictions share a concern, is what happens to the older adult with a disability where there's a problem. And Carmen, in past presentations, has talked about how at a neighborhood-by-neighborhood level we identify, we go door-to-door to get people's information in the event of an event, in the event of a seismic event. Do we know where someone who's wheelchair-bound or a senior that's in need of help is? That we do at a local level. But there's a lot of folks like that in multifamily mm-hmm. buildings that are going to require special care if there's a, if that building's knocked out. And so, appreciate it.
So, could you refresh my memory how many seismically retrofitted bridges across the Willamette there are?
Really only two partial. The only two are the Burnside and the Markham. They've received what's known as a phase one upgrade. Phase one is when they attach the deck to the columns. Phase two, which is more expensive, is when the columns are retrofitted so the columns don't fall down. None of the bridges have a phase two retrofit.
So I guess this, you know, and I realize you're all sleep deprived, but I do want to voice my objection here and my concern to the fact that given what you've just said, that the West Side staging area and our backup emergency communication center is not scheduled to come online until December of 2016. I mean, I guess, first of all, the skeptic in me always wonders when I'm given a two-year plan and there's a lot of deliverables due at the very last minute of that two-year plan, because that says to me usually that's an aspirational deadline. So I am very concerned because this is a high priority for the city council. Mm-hmm. And I have raised this concern with the commissioner in charge. Why are we dragging our feet? December 2016 is entirely unacceptable for the only emergency staging center, backup community communication center on the west side of the river. It's unacceptable.
I want to assure you, Commissioner Saltzman, that actually things are in motion about getting that up and running earlier. We're currently in the process of getting the site rezoned. That's the absolute first step. We can't do anything on the property until we get it rezoned.
And we've had that conversation about 8 months ago.
It's a type three review, so that's the longest process. We are expecting that'll be completed by, I believe, March or April of 2014. The next step, and I'll look to the leadership of council, is to identify funding to move forward then with all the site improvements that need to take place. So putting the fueling station on there and making all the site improvements, we have not identified funding for that yet. So that's our next hurdle, but the wheels are in motion and we are moving forward with that.
I was under the impression we were already using the fueling stations.
There's no fueling available on that property just yet.
Okay, so walk me through it.
Okay.
So we get the zone change.
You know, zone, right, the zone
least
change.
Least controversial, probably, of this whole aspect, perhaps.
He'll be surprised.
Well, no, I realize that, you know, maybe the near-end neighbors have concerns, but this is a citywide priority.
Absolutely.
And so the zone change, okay, let's say March of 2014.
Right.
Okay, walk us through from there when it's going to be operational.
So the next step then is to identify funding to install probably a 10,000-gallon fuel tank there of mixed fuel, diesel, and gas. Incorporate PBOT's de-icing operations on the property, and then make all the changes necessary for the building to be seismically retrofitted and able to reach essential facility standards. So all of those projects in total, I believe, come out to about 13, maybe not quite that much, maybe $9 to $11 million. And I think that's the next hurdle for us, is where do we come up with the funding to make that happen.
And what's the price tag for simply the de-icing and the fueling station?
I believe rough order of magnitude estimates for the fueling station, about $1 million. And for the de-icing, maybe a couple million. But those are, I don't have the enough figures in front of me.
3 million out of that 11.
Correct.
Okay. And aren't those, in fact, the most
The fueling critical? Station, in my opinion, is the most critical. There's no question.
And Commissioner, we actually did, in the context of the bump, submit a request for money for those items. And the budget office told us that it wouldn't qualify as a capital expense eligible for bump money for various technical reasons. I think that the memo also included a reference to how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. But we accepted that judgment that it wasn't eligible for those funds. But we definitely will be pursuing funds in the context of the next budget. And the economist has indicated that we might have as much as $7 million in one-time money. And we will ask for as much of that as we possibly get.
Well, Steve, are you thinking of on the off chance it's unlikely you're going to get $7 million at one time, mm-hmm. given our other budget holes? Are you thinking of financing that and using a stream of ongoing money that we've freed up to pay off a line of credit?
I'm not aware of any source of money that would allow us to do that. I mean,
we did free up some ongoing when we paid off debt. And that is, we're going to have some ongoing money that's not allocated when we take up the budget. Just as one commissioner speaking, I would encourage you to look to a chunk of ongoing that we could pledge to a line of credit, which might get you to where you want to go without having to grab all the one time.
I very much appreciate the invitation, and we will ask for that as well.
And I guess concentrate. The fueling station is the top thing.
Top priority.
Let's get that done. Let's get one thing done. And, you know, before December 2016.
Absolutely. I mean, right now, the only west side fueling station is the basement garage at First and Jefferson. So it's a really critical situation.
Thank you.
Other questions, concerns?
I just want to comment on that after 5 years of cuts, we have lots of facilities needs that we don't have funding for. And we had a lot of discussion in last year's budget about austerity and the fact that now is the time to look at raising more revenue. So if you look at some of the needs of buildings that are falling down now, never mind will fall down in an earthquake right. that some of our employees right. are working in,
yeah.
There's hundreds of millions of dollars worth of needs and facilities that we don't have the funding for. So I think it's going to be another very difficult budget coming up. One thing that I want to highlight from Section 4 of the plan is working on encouraging or requiring hazard resilient buildings through development services and the code. I think there's going to need, we will need to provide some money to assist property owners who simply can't afford to do that. And is it worth the public good to have buildings that don't fall down on people? And I would say yes, it is. But we shouldn't expect that every property owner is going to be able to do that. There's some things like the proposed gas shutoff valves for residential properties that Commissioner Novick has been spearheading that actually are pretty affordable and make sense, and there might still need to be some assistance to some property owners for things like that and for the tie down of houses to foundations and things. We're going to need to be creative and to look for grant opportunities and other funding sources, as well as perhaps going to the taxpayers of Portland and saying, what do you want to buy and how do you want to pay for it?
Actually, to jump back to the issue of the bridges, Mr. Rizzi, is my understanding that you guys are taking a deep look at what it would take to fully prepare the Burnside Bridge? Or am I making that up?
No, that's correct, Commissioner. We actually have a project that will be over the next year that they're evaluating. I believe there's two bridges that they're evaluating. I don't want to misspeak, so I can get that information for you guys. So our roads and bridge department is making a capital investment to really get a full scope of what it's going to take to make whether the bridge will hold up, what needs to be done in phase two of some of them, what are our best bridges to kind of invest funding in. So right now, obviously, the Sailwood Bridge is being built to a seismic standard. I did a tour of that recently, and that was pretty impressive to see the largest rebar that they possibly make is throughout that bridge. But I'm hoping over the next year we're going to have a better definition of what the cost would be to do seismic upgrades on some of the bridges and which ones we should invest the most amount of money in.
Commissioner Novick, just on that point, since the council has directed the Water Bureau to look at different options for creating resilience on our pipes across the Willamette, whether they are underground or whether they're connected to a bridge. Is this an action item, first of all, in your emergency plan, and how best can we coordinate this discussion between the city and the county, since it seems to me that the assessment of the resilience of your bridges may have some impact on decisions we make about where we put new conduits across the river, which we have the same concern about resilience as you do for the bridge. So any thoughts on that?
Burnside is a critically important for a couple of reasons. One, it is one of the only ones that's been had any retrofits, but it's also what's called an emergency transportation route. So of all the bridges, we'd like to see that one, and because the bridges are county assets, we certainly want to support the county and their recent assessment. It may be that maybe there's another bridge that might make more sense to retrofit, but I'll defer to my counterpart.
Yeah, and I think our goal is to complete the assessment and then find out where we are cost-wise for the bridges and then identify and say, okay, and work with the city and say those kind of criteria will definitely fall into play of lifelines, other impacts that bridge might have for utilities, et cetera. So we'd be glad to have that discussion once we get the information on what is the scope of actually improving.
We may want to jumpstart this a little bit, because if we're going to have in our five-year CIP money for upgrading, enhancing, or replacing pipes across the Willamette, and you come along and say that as part of a seismic upgrade of a bridge, we could actually run the pipe above water, and we could all save money, and we would be contributing our share. That's an opportunity we're going to lose if we're not synced up in terms of your assessment and our assessment and our timetable for spending funds on our CIP. So
yeah, we looked at that question with respect to the Ross Island Bridge and ODOT bridge, but same arises with the fixed bridges that the county has.
The mayor raised a question a few months ago about in a presentation from your shop, Commissioner Fish, about given you've got this pipe running along the Ross Island Bridge, if we strengthen the Ross Island Bridge, would that preserve that pipe and would that give us what we need? And actually, I heard from your staff about that from ODOT, and basically that particular proposal apparently is impractical. That doesn't mean that no such proposal is practical, but we did look into that, and it doesn't seem to work.
But we'll have this discussion and when we get into the budget about our five-year CIP. It's just interesting. Mm-hmm. There may be a point of collaboration here. It may not be, but I just want to flag it for further discussion.
And I appreciate you flagging it. I will bring it up to the chair as well as the director of DCS, who's spearheading that project, to make sure that we collaborate with you and let you know what we're doing, so we could kind of figure out, you know, anything we can do to help save taxpayer funding so we're not doing two different projects would be great.
On the topic of bridges, by the way, I have an utterly useless piece of information that I feel compelled to share just because I find it so entertaining that I heard from Mr. Rizzi. There's a, was it in Nevada, Joe? There's a, this sort of, this location where they can, or people that can actually model the seismic events and what might happen in various situations.
Yeah, the University of Nevada just built a seismic shake table building that has three different shake tables, and they're testing bridges. They've done some very interesting studies, and I think that's the one you're talking about, where they wanted to, they do all the theoretical studies, and then they do a practical of, does it really hold up? And so the study they did was really around having the question or hypothesis is a bridge more resilient with vehicles on it or off of it? And so large trucks and things like that, and you'd ponder it and say, oh, well, it must be really bad if things are on it. And so they tested it and actually built this bridge and put pickups on it with filled with sand and everything else, and they tested it and tested the bridge first with nothing on it and shook it until failure, and then put the trucks on it and did it. And what they found out was it's actually more resilient with vehicles on it. And the reason being is because all the shocks and all the springs on the vehicles actually act as dampers. So having cars on a vehicle helps sustain the bridge, which sounds pretty silly, but
so if there's a seismic event, we should go to the nearest bridge. And will you then ticket us?
Now, the Bureau of Transportation is committed to facilitating vehicles on bridges during an earthquake.
No tickets will be issued.
One other, if I could, one other question. You mentioned social media and alerts. Mm-hmm. You know, when there's an Amber Alert locally, I've noticed that they've really raise their profile. So we get it on our smartphones. Yeah. We Clear Channel does, where they have electronic signs, they go live. Are we at that level of penetration on social media?
We are. We are one of the only cities in Oregon that actually has that capability. It's called Wireless Emergency Alerts. And we can send a ping, a text to your phone. Has a special tone, it vibrates. The the challenge is that the message goes countywide. The carriers have not yet been able to narrow the geographic area to a small radius. So if we sent a message out, it would have to go countywide, and that's the challenge.
Other questions, concerns? I just want to flag one. Both Commissioner Novick and you, Carmen, have talked a lot about the need for exercises and practice. We got one here, over the last 3 days. So we do look forward to your after action report. Right. About that. My sense of that, from one of my impressions from that, is that although the infrastructure questions that we've talked about here today and other times are important, the human side of it really is too. I think we learned quite a bit from this exercise, which, again, fortunately, this was a real emergency in which nobody got hurt, and yet there was a significant need to coordinate information and communication, and I got a better picture probably than most exercises of how that works and doesn't work. But I think the human side of this, about how do we communicate with people,
right,
how do we coordinate between agencies, is really important and really affects how well we recover from anything. And so I think there's a lot to learn, and we did learn a lot. Carmen and I are probably going to be okay not talking to each other at 5 o'clock in the morning for the next few days, but it was pretty eye-opening in that aspect as well. And so you'd called that out as, you know, item 2.4, that we should do some more exercises. We should, because this was a relatively limited event, you know, only involving electricity. But nevertheless, I think there's a lot to learn on that front as well. How do we work together? How do we avoid friction loss between this agency and this organization and that private utility? All those things came up in this incident.
Just one comment I want to add is that we, of course, privately spend all sorts of time